The recorder is ice cold, was all he said. Johnny held his breath. He had a pretty good idea of what the bomb did, but he was not sure. This was the touch-and-go moment. He hit the remote. Off went the spotlights. On went the recorder picture. There in the dark before them was Asart, three-dimensional. There were the five ellipses which identified it. Used to bombs and explosions, they had indifferently expected to see some high tower of dust or smoke. Actually, they had not thought, most of them, that much would happen. Johnny had been so calm, so polite, certainly not in a mood in which one engaged in war. They didn't see anything strange for a moment. And then, as the picture rolled off the disk, they saw a hole occurring in the upper right surface of Asart. Just a hole. No, there was a bit of black around the edge of it. Slime, ear cocked at the sky, felt a jar of alarm. What in the name of 50 devils was going on here? But he relaxed. Bombs went boom. There were no bombs that made just a hole. The picture went off and Faljapan's My Voice Here came on.
Theatrics, laughed Slime. You're engaging in nonsense.
My lords, said Johnny, does another one of you have a picto recorder I can borrow? Yes, my lord Dom had one. He went and got it, and they went through the same procedure as before. Angus updated the time, cast the recorder to a new angle, and got it back. Lord Dom, a little bit frightened at the implications of this to the 1,200 worlds of his republic, had a quaver in his voice when he put it on the disk. Johnny hit the switches. Asart gleamed in the dark before them. About 1/100th of the moon had become a hole edged in curling black clouds. And just before the view went off, down in the lower left, it looked like a door had opened in the crust, not part of the growing hole. A breath of terror trembled through the gathering, but Johnny was not going to let it become a riot. You see, my lords, the dragon was hungry. He laughed lightly. He is also a very obedient dragon. Told to eat the moon, he is eating Asart. A very controllable dragon, after all. Had he hit them with ice water, he could not have produced a more chilling effect. Their eyes focused on him in growing horror. Slime broke the spell. It had occurred to him that he had a new way to guarantee success. He had a spare gun in his hamper, as well as a recorder. He had just felt in his boot and discovered the weapon gone. Damn that valet. Hauvin's slaves were never any good.
All you are doing, said Slime, is casting that recorder out somewhere to a model you've made in the hills. And you have people regulating a model for it to photograph. You're a fraud.
And Slime really believed it. But he had to make sure before he went off the edge.
There's a recorder in my hamper.
Go get it, said Johnny. Slime rushed to his apartment. He scrambled through the hamper. Ah, not just a spare gun, but also a spare scepter hidden in the bottom, a spare with another paralysis beam in its heel. He could leave one on in a chair while he carried the other one out to turn the power cable off. Ha ha, 3 blast grenades. After he turned the beam on, he'd pitch one into the ops room and use the other 2 to silence anyone rushing out of another door. Perfect. He wouldn't torture the Hauvin slave after all. Good fellow. Slime carried the whole hamper back to the gathering and set it beside his chair. Cautiously opening it so they wouldn't see what else was in it, he removed the picto recorder. It was a different make and type, but it played a disc.
Devil, said Slime. We will end your fraud here and now. You would not know, not being a native of a proper planet, that on the back of Asart is a huge diamond with a slash. It is done with hyperband nullifying material to act as a navigation and identification marker. It is unknown to practically everyone except a fleet officer. The marker will not show up on your standard recorders. And you have none like this one that takes the hyperspectrum as well as what you call visible light. It will show that diamond and slash. Yours won't. So, of course, you didn't put one on your fake model. I am about to expose you as the fraud of all time.
He sounded confident, but before that rig was destroyed, he really had to know. Was it a model up in the hills, or was that Asart? If it was Asart, should he be sure his torturer got the secret of teleportation? What a weapon. He slithered over and put his recorder into the gyro cage, sealed the cage shut with a claw pattern, and walked off the platform. Angus had heard it all. He shifted coordinates so that the recorder would view both the back of Asart and the hole. He fired it and recalled it, and when the recoil died, Lord Slime raced up to it, checked the claw pattern. It had not been broken. He came back to the projector. He made absolutely sure it was not projecting something else. He put, "This is Lord Slime," on the disc and put it into the machine. Did his ear detect a far-off whine in the sky? 8. Lord Slime felt there would be no diamond and slash beacon in the picture that would in a moment be shown. Only Tolnep eyes would ever detect that, and only a Tolnep-modified picto recorder could film it. He would use this moment to distract the others. Yes, that was a whine in the sky. The fleet would be over them in moments. The timing was just right. How clever of him. But he had a well-deserved reputation as a slippery diplomat. Formidable, in fact. He walked over to his chair, made very sure his hamper was well within reach. He glanced back at the assembled emissaries. They were all craning forward, tensely, waiting for the picture to come on, totally off guard. He spotted exactly where the devil was standing, slightly in front of them all, and well clear of the projector. Slime fingered the bottom ring of the scepter.
"Turn on the latest picture of your fake model," jeered Slime.
Johnny hit the buttons. Off went the mind spotlights. On went the three-dimensional picture of Asart. It was a new angle. It showed the backside of the moon as well as some of the front. Filtration gave it a bluish hue, but it was Asart. It seemed to float hugely before them. And right there in the center, massive and unmistakable, was the diamond and slash insignia of Tolnep, jet black on the surface of the moon. Slime gasped. It was real. That really was Asart. One of the ends of the slash was supposed to point to a hangar door, and even as they looked, that door finished opening, the huge, yawning mouth of a Tolnep-made cavern. The moon had deflated further now. It resembled a blue balloon with one side being poked relentlessly in, a great pucker that was growing bigger now and at a more rapid rate. What appeared to be black gases were eddying up to fill the sunken part. And then, out of that yawning hangar bolted a war vessel. Although it must have been traveling very fast, the enormous size of it caused it to seem to move in slow motion. At least 30,000 tons of Tolnep capital ship was seeking to escape into space. But it was too late. It had already been touched by the pucker within the moon. A whole back section of the ship was gone. Before the fixated eyes of the delegates, the vast space vessel was eaten up from tail to nose, its massive metal turned to gases. Other hangar doors were starting to open. But that was the extent of the picture. One last puff of black gas as the final bit of capital ship was overtaken by disaster, and the recorded voice said,
"This is Lord Slime."
Slime screamed. Then he acted. He popped his earplug shut. He leaped up. He wrenched at the bottom ring of the scepter and, as though it were a machine gun, swept it in an arc from left to right to freeze them all.
"Paralyze!" screamed Slime. "Stand dead! Damn you, stand dead!"
It wasn't happening fast enough. There was a surge of emissaries away from him, some falling. He snatched the other scepter from the basket. He twisted the bottom ring and swept it all around, taking in guards in rifle pits. They were not falling quickly enough. Slime dove into the hamper and came up with three grenades. With all his considerable might, he hurled one into the open door of the ops room. He sent another at the bowl entrance. He hurled the third at the devil. Before they could even land, such was his speed of reaction, he had the gun out of the hamper. He lined it up on the devil, square at his face, 30 feet away. With joy, he pulled the trigger. It did not fire. Lord Dom, a bulbous creature from a mostly liquid world, was bouncing to his feet and coming at him. Schleim raised the pistol on high, preparing to bring it down on Dom and splatter him. A Tallnep could physically smash them all. Straight as a sizzling arrow, Johnny threw his knob carry. The hard butt end smashed into Schleim's eye filters. Lord Browl, the massive tree-like emissary, who had sat behind him, wrapped Schleim in foot-diameter arms and held him from behind in a creaking vise.
"Hold him still," shouted Foul Japan. "Don't let him touch his body."
With a flick of his wrist, Foul Japan snapped a beak-like knife into his right claw and advanced upon Schleim. The Tallnep struggled, but the huge arms held. Foul Japan peered with beady eyes all around the steel-like neck of the Tallnep.
"Ah," he said finally, "there is the half-healed incision."
His knife moved in and began to cut. Gray drops of Tallnep blood oozed from the shallow gash that was being made. Foul Japan squeezed the wound, and a fragile glassine capsule popped out of it. It was intact.
"His suicide capsule," said Foul Japan.
"All he had to do was strike the side of his neck, and he would have been dead."
He looked reprovingly at Johnny.
"Had you hit this with that throwing stick, we would have had no defendant."
It was Johnny's first intimation that all was not going to go exactly as planned, and that all was not well. Foul Japan turned to the others, now crowding around. He shouted in a squalling voice,
"Is it the will of the conference that this emissary be under conference arrest and be brought to trial?"
They thought. They pondered. They looked at one another. One said something about invoking Clause 32. Johnny could only think of getting in there and getting the war stopped now. Didn't these lords realize people were dying? And as for Schleim, hadn't they seen him try to use weapons on all of them? But he had collided with the ponderous idiocies for which governments and courts were renowned. There was even a growing whine in the sky. It threatened their own safety.
"I move that he be properly tried," a lord at the back called out.
"All those in favor?" shouted another.
All non-combatant lords said, "Aye." The combatant one said, "No."
"I hereby declare," said Foul Japan, "that the emissary of Tallnep is a prisoner of the conference and is to be duly tried under Clause 32, threatening physical violence to the conference."
That whine in the sky was much louder now. Johnny shouldered his way through. He got right in front of the Tallnep. He pushed a scepter at his face. "Is this what you were looking for, Schleim? This is the real one. The others were just copies we made. Duds like the rest of your weapons." Schleim was struggling and screaming.
"Get me some chains," shouted Foul Japan.
Johnny came close to the Tallnep's face, but Foul Japan was prying in among Schleim's teeth to make sure there were no other capsules to bite down on. The moment that was done, Johnny spoke again. "Schleim, tell your captain up there to draw off. Talk, or I'll shove this radio down your throat." Lord Dom tried to push Johnny away.
"This is a conference prisoner. He may not be communicated with until tried. Clause 51, governing trial procedures."
Johnny somehow controlled his temper. "Lord Dom, this conference is at this very instant under threat of bombing. For its own safety, I demand that Schleim..."
"Demand?" said Foul Japan. "Hear now, those are very strong words. There are certain procedures that must be observed, and you are hereby officially informed that you yourself threw an object at an emissary. The conference..."
"To save his life," cried Johnny, pointing at Dom. "This Tallnep would have crushed his skull."
"You were acting then," said Foul Japan, "as master-at-arms of this conference?"
"I do not recall any appointment."
Johnny took a breath. He thought fast. "I was acting as the appointee of the host planet, which is responsible for protecting the lives of invited delegates." He knew of no such procedure.
"Ah," said Lord Dom. He is invoking Clause 41, Responsibilities of the Planet Responsible for Assembling Emissaries.
Ah, said Faljapan. Then you cannot also be charged. Where are those chains?
A Chinese guard was running up with coils of jangling mine hoist chains. Two pilots followed him with another tangle of heavy links.
Under Clause 41, said Johnny desperately, I must demand of the prisoner that he surrender his offensive forces at once.
Lord Dom looked at Faljapan. Faljapan shook his head.
All that can be arranged, per Clause 19, is a temporary suspension of hostilities where warfare threatens the physical safety of a conference.
Good, said Johnny. He knew he was at risk. These emissaries were not as friendly now. But he would push it all he could. He had to save lives, not only theirs, but those of any survivors of Edinburgh. He shoved the radio close to Schleim's mouth. Declare an immediate suspension of hostilities, Schleim, and tell that captain up there to draw his forces off.
Lord Schleim simply spat at them. They were wrapping him in chains now. Somebody had found a spare filter in the hamper and replaced the shattered ones over his eyes so he could see. They had him on the ground, and he looked like a huge coil of hoist chain. Only his face was visible now. His lips were drawn back, and nothing but hisses were coming out of him. Johnny was about to rage at him that if he didn't talk into this radio, the planet of Tallnep would get one big dragon. The thought that this, too, might violate something made him hesitate for a moment, searching for words. Lord Dom accidentally solved it before Johnny could speak.
Slime, said Lord Dom, I am sure it will go much easier with you at your trial if you call off your forces.
This was the bit of grass that Slime had been wriggling to get.
On that condition, and if the captain of that fleet up there will forego his piratical venture and follow my orders, give me the radio.
It was promptly shoved at his mouth by a Johnny who would rather have smashed his fangs in with it. No codes, just say, I have hereby declared a temporary suspension of hostilities, and you are ordered to withdraw into orbit remote from all combat areas. Slime looked at the faces above him. When Johnny pressed the hidden talk switch, Slime surprised them all by saying exactly what Johnny had told him to say. But was there a lurking smile on the Tallnep's mouth? Some prearrangement or regulation must be going into effect up there in space. Rogo Dieter Snell's voice came back through the scepter.
It is my duty to inquire whether the emissary of Tallnep is under any physical threat or duress.
They looked at each other. It was obvious that Tallnep naval regulations covered such sudden and otherwise inexplicable orders. Slime, wrapped to the chin in heavy, mine-hoist chain, smiled.
May I speak to him again?
Tell him to comply at once, said Johnny. He didn't want to make an overt threat against the Tallnep planet in this company and at this time. Again, Slime said exactly what Johnny had told him to say. Rogo Dieter Snell's voice came back.
I can only comply if I am assured that the personal safety of the emissary of Tallnep is guaranteed and that the conference promises to return him unharmed to the planet Tallnep.
Faljapan said to Lord Dom,
It simply precludes execution.
By Clause 42, said Lord Brow, a trial can still be held. It is quite normal. I move we guarantee this emissary's safe return as a personal matter. All those in favor?
The eyes came back, unanimous this time. Faljapan was looking around.
Where is...
The small gray man appeared among them. He took the scepter from Johnny. He looked around at the faces of the lords, and then, as they nodded, he spoke into the mic. First, he gave a code word, followed by a peculiar buzz which seemed to come from the lapel of his gray suit. Then he said,
Captain Snell, it is certified that the emissary of Tallnep will be returned, physically unharmed, to his planet in due course, but not with any unreasonable delay.
Snell's voice came back.
Thank you, Your Excellency. Please inform the emissaries that I will honor a temporary suspension of hostilities, and at this moment am withdrawing to an orbit clear of this and all combat areas. End transmission.
Johnny was pointing at the emissaries of the other combatants. They were the ones wrecking Edinburgh and Russia. "Lord Falgepan," said Johnny, "I am certain any temporary suspension of hostilities includes all combatants."
"Ah," said Falgepan. He thought. "We have no guarantee that only Tolnep's ships were up there. It would be irregular for these others not to agree."
But the Bolbod, Draken, Hovin, and other combatant lords were pointing at Sir Robert, who was standing outside the ops room.
"We agree," shouted Sir Robert with an expression of disgust for their delays.
The combatant emissaries started to look around for communication facilities. A mob of communicators with mics rushed out and almost knocked them down. With a spatter and batter of many tongues, the other combatants ordered a temporary suspension of hostilities for all their ships.
Good God, thought Johnny. All this while men went on dying. It was still very touch and go. No one had said hostilities would not be resumed, and with even greater ferocity.
And who was this small gray man who exerted such power over them? Where did he fit in? Who was he? What would he want out of all this? Another threat?